Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. The United States confirmed that Iran released 10 U.S. Navy sailors Wednesday, a day after they were detained when they drifted into Iranian territorial waters. A Pentagon statement said there was no indication the 9 men and 1 woman were harmed while in Iranian custody. In a speech earlier today, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry thanked the Iranian government for treating the soldiers well.
I also want to thank the Iranian authorities for their cooperation and quick response. These are always situations which, as everybody here knows, have an ability, if not properly guided, to get out of control. And I'm appreciative for the quick and appropriate response of the Iranian authorities.
The sailors were on two small boats in the Persian Gulf between Kuwait and Bahrain when U.S. controllers lost contact with them on Tuesday. U.S. officials said they were picked up near Farsi Island, and the Pentagon said Wednesday that they left the island in the same two boats before being taken ashore by Navy aircraft. Meanwhile, the Navy says it's investigating the incident. A suicide bomber killed 12 people in northern Cameroon Wednesday when he blew himself up at a mosque during morning prayers. Officials say the early morning attack occurred in a village near the border with Nigeria. So far, there's been no official claim of responsibility. A confidential UN memo to the Security Council warns that a proposed peacekeeping force for Burundi would be unable to quell large-scale violence in the African country. The memo was sent by UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Ledsous, and he advised council members last week to travel to Bujumbura for urgent talks on the crisis over President Pierre Nkurunziza's election to a third term. You're listening to VOA News. Pakistani police and hospital officials said a suicide bombing Wednesday at a polio vaccination center in southwestern Pakistan killed at least 14 people and wounded 23 others. The attack occurred in the city of Quetta, the capital of Baluchistan province, and authorities say most of the casualties were security personnel. A spokesman for the outlawed Tehrik-e-Taliban has claimed responsibility in a statement to reporters. Officials in eastern Afghanistan said a gun and bomb attack Wednesday in Jalalabad killed 7 security personnel and wounded 10 people, including 3 civilians. Afghan police and witnesses said the attack began with several massive explosions near the Pakistani consulate. The Pakistani diplomatic sources told VOA that the attackers did not enter the consulate and that the staff was safe. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. World Economic Forum founder Klaus Schwab says the fusion of different technological advances, which are changing the world as never before, will be a major focus at the forum's annual meeting next week in the Swiss Alpine village of Davos. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
As part of the formal agenda, more than 300 sessions will deal with critical issues involving global security, the refugee and migration crisis, geopolitical tensions, climate change, sustainable development, and the global economy. Taking center stage will be an in-depth discussion about what Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Forum, calls the fourth industrial revolution. Schwab says the revolution is being driven by advances in artificial intelligence, robotics, autonomous vehicles, 3D printing, nanotechnology, and other areas of science. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A Turkish official said Wednesday authorities had arrested one person in connection with the suicide bombing Tuesday in Istanbul that killed 10 people. The country's interior minister said the detention happened late on Tuesday, but did not give any further details on the suspect's identity or possible role in the attack. The minister also said the bomber was not on a list of people wanted by Turkey. Turkish authorities arrested a number of suspected Islamic State militants during raids on Wednesday that included 3 Russian nationals. Swedish prosecutors have asked Ecuador's permission to interview WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy in London over allegations of rape. The Swedish Protection Authority announced the move Wednesday, saying it was not possible to estimate when an answer might be given. Assange has been living at the Ecuadorian embassy in London since June 2012 to avoid extradition to Sweden. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs is condemning the closure and destruction of a displaced persons camp in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The sudden development left several thousand people with no place to live.
That's Nick Long reporting from Goma in Eastern DRC. Details coming up.
Also, at least one suicide bomber has detonated at a mosque in northern Cameroon, killing at least 10 people. And Nigeria calls for an emergency meeting of OPEC as world oil prices continue to tumble.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, at least one suicide bomber has detonated at a mosque in northern Cameroon, killing at least 10 people and injuring at least a dozen more. Local officials reported the incident early today, saying the bomber was included in the death toll. The pre-dawn incident took place in the town of Kolofata, near the border with Nigeria. While there has been no official claim of responsibility yet, the incident bears striking resemblance to various Boko Haram attacks in the area. The Islamic extremist group has waged battle for an Islamic state in northeastern Nigeria for the past 6 years and has recently begun crossing over into Nigeria's neighbors to stage attacks. Cameroon is one of five nations, including Nigeria, to take part in an international coalition to defeat the group. The coalition is made up of troops from Nigeria, Niger, Chad, Cameroon, and Benin.
A confidential memo warns the UN Security Council not to send a peacekeeping force to Burundi. According to the French news agency, the memo says a peacekeeping force would not be able to stop large-scale violence. AFP says the memo was written by UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Ladouce last week. It quotes him as saying a truly worst-case scenario will result in a scale of violence beyond the United Nations' capacity to protect. The memo goes on to say that United Nations peacekeeping is limited in its ability to address significant violence against civilians, even violence amounting to genocide. Hundreds of people have died in violence in Burundi since April. That's when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in office. About 250,000 people have fled to neighboring countries. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports there was more violence today in Bujumbura. It says an army captain and a police brigadier who defected from security forces have been killed in a gunfight with security forces. Police identify them as Captain Idi Omar Bahenda and Brigadier General Claude Inyangabo. Police say they were traveling in a car in which weapons were found.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs is condemning the closure and destruction of a displaced persons camp in eastern DRC. The sudden development left several thousand people with no place to live. Nick Long reports from Goma in eastern DRC.
OCHA spokesperson Nadia Berger says nearly 4,300 people were living at the Makoto camp, about 70 kilometers northwest of Goma in eastern Congo's North Kivu province.
The site was burned down, and the people had to move away and find shelter somewhere else. At the moment, we don't really know where they have gone. There's a team on their way to Makoto to monitor the situation.
Berger said the provincial authorities announced their decision to close the camp about a week ago on security grounds.
The provincial authorities told us is that the firearm was found in one of the huts, so they decided to close the camp because it's in contradiction with the civilian character of IDP site.
The head of OCHA in the DRC, Ryan Poulsen, called the camp closure a collective punishment imposed on vulnerable people. Berger says OCHA and other aid organizations tried to delay the closure, but without success.
Our reaction and the reaction of the humanitarian community is that, of course, we would have liked to have more time to prepare for that. We're not against the closure of the camps, but we want to do it in a proper manner so we have enough time to let the displaced person decide where they want to go.
North Kivu has been racked by violence between the government and various militia groups for years. There are estimated to be about 600,000 displaced people in the province, of whom about 35% live in displacement sites. Local authorities have called for camp closure since 2014, and five camps were closed last year. But aid workers say there needs to be more cooperation from the authorities in the search for long-term solutions for the displaced, including more efforts to give them access to land they can farm. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 11 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. At least one suicide bomber has detonated at a mosque in northern Cameroon, killing at least 10 people. Since it would not be able to stop large-scale violence, a confidential memo warns the UN Security Council not to send a peacekeeping force to Burundi. And the UN Office for Coordination of Human Affairs is condemning the closure of and destruction of a displaced persons camp in eastern DRC. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Nigeria has called for an emergency meeting of OPEC as world oil prices continue to tumble. An OPEC meeting could come in early March. AFP quotes Nigerian officials as saying they do not plan to cut oil production to try to boost prices. Cartel members have been reluctant to do so because they fear losing their market share. Most of Nigeria's export earnings come from oil, as does most of the government's funds.
President Barack Obama has threatened to block South Africa from sending agricultural products duty-free to the United States. South Africa usually exports more than $154 million worth of the products to the U.S. annually. The duty-free allowance falls under AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act. Mr. Obama gave South Africa until March 15th to strengthen out what Pretoria calls technical difficulties. The U.S. wants South Africa to lift barriers on U.S. meat and poultry products. VOA's David Arnold talked to WIT reporter Delia Robertson in Johannesburg about President Obama's decision to temporarily suspend South Africa's duty-free trade allowance.
I think that came as a bit of a surprise to the South Africans, but some sort of further explanation has come forth explaining that it's a procedural matter.
What are the kinds of products that South Africa wants to ship to the United States?
I think one of the biggest ones is citrus. At the moment, we have large citrus-producing farms in this country, and South Africa had hoped to continue sending citrus. And, of course, if it doesn't get the benefits under AGOA, it comes into direct competition with other suppliers such as Brazil.
And what is it about our poultry, pork, and beef products that is a problem for South African consumers or the government?
They were concerned about dumping of cheap products on South Africa because, as you know, the U.S. naturally is a much, much larger producer of these products, and South African producers would suffer as a consequence, particularly small producers who are emerging black farmers. The other concern was, particularly as far as poultry is concerned, were the health regulations that South Africa imposes on imported poultry, and they've had to lower the standards for this deal because the standards that are set in this country are the same as those required for importing to and from Europe. And the health requirements are higher, particularly as regards to salmonella.
Does this suggest that the U.S. health standards for consumption of poultry are lower than those in South Africa and Europe?
Yes, In fact, they are. The levels of salmonella allowed in poultry in the United States are fractionally higher than what is allowed in this country and in Europe.
Can you explain anything about the historically disadvantaged importers that are one of the subjects of these negotiations?
It's historically disadvantaged consumers, I think, more they're concerned with. One of the elements of this agreement is that the United States and South Africa will ensure that sellers in this country, in black communities, who are the historically disadvantaged communities because of apartheid, one of the elements of this agreement requires that those shop owners and business people get part of this product so that they then have a cheaper product that they can sell on to their consumers.
Any hope that it's going to be resolved anytime soon?
South Africa said today that it's pretty sure it can meet the deadline of 15th of March, and they said that they're working together with the U.S., various U.S. authorities, and with local importers and U.S. exporters to try and meet that deadline. Sometimes I think in these issues there's also an element of brinkmanship that goes on that have less to do with trade issues than what they have to do with geopolitics. Some people in this country have raised the possibility that the United States is digging its heels in on this and being particularly tough on South Africa on this issue because of South Africa's close relations with China and Russia.
That was reporter Delia Robertson in Johannesburg. She spoke with VOA's David Arnold.
The West Africa Ebola outbreak could officially be declared over tomorrow. That's when Liberia is expected to get the all clear that there have been no new Ebola cases over the past 42 days. The World Health Organization is scheduled to make the announcement in Geneva a day earlier than had been originally planned. There were more than 28,000 Ebola cases over the past 2 years, mostly in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. More than 11,000 people died. Liberia was the hardest hit of the three countries with about 4,800 deaths. Its last two Ebola patients were discharged from the hospital on December 3rd.
Denmark's legislature will vote later this month on a controversial bill that would allow the government to seize cash and other assets of migrants and refugees. The proposal has been condemned by the UN Refugee Agency and some rights groups. The AP says the bill would allow authorities to seize cash and other items worth more than $1,400. Wedding rings and other items of sentimental value would not be confiscated. Greece says it will request the European Union's border patrol agency, Frontex, to help establish a route to deport any migrants and refugees who do not receive EU asylum. They would be returned to Turkey. Meanwhile, Lebanon has begun forcing Syrian refugees to return home where they risk persecution or death. And Jordan has increasingly tightened its admissions policy after keeping an open door policy for Syria's refugees since 2011.
Germany has outlined plans to tighten deportation laws for foreigners in the wake of the series of attacks on hundreds of women in Cologne and other cities on New Year's Eve. Police say the attacks appear to have been carried out by groups of young migrant men. 19 suspects have so far been identified, all of them migrants. As Henry Ridgewell reports, there have been several revenge attacks against foreigners in Cologne.
Far-right supporters and football hooligans smashed shop windows and damaged cars in the eastern city of Leipzig in the early hours of Tuesday. The rampage began around the same time that 2,000 supporters of the anti-Islamic Pegida movement demonstrated nearby, carrying signs with slogans like Freedom for Germany. Olaf Spermer was among the protesters. Spermer said what has really annoyed them in recent months is the whole situation regarding foreigners and how things have been handled. He says he's not alone in how he feels and that many people think things will end in a very bad way. German Justice Minister Heiko Maas Tuesday outlined tougher deportation laws for anyone convicted of certain crimes, including sexual assault. Police have recorded more than 500 criminal complaints from New Year's Eve, almost half of which involved sexual assault. Andrea Mamone, an expert on the European far right at Royal Holloway, University of London, says anti-immigrant groups are exploiting the attacks for political gain.
Trying to spread this message, we told you. So we told you that it was unacceptable to have these people. We told you that it was a danger to have these people. We told you that they were coming from different traditions, different culture, and that they couldn't understand our values.
In a series of revenge attacks on foreigners in Cologne, 6 Pakistanis, 2 Syrians, and 3 men from Guinea were injured. German Chancellor Angela Merkel defended her policy of accepting over 1 million refugees Tuesday.
Wir wissen seit den schrecklichen Ereignissen in der Nacht von Köln,
she said Germans know that since the terrible events of that night in Cologne, for integration to work, society needs to be open. But she said the refugees also need to be willing to follow the country's rules and values. Cologne police have set up a 100-strong team to investigate the New Year's Eve attacks and are looking at exchanges on social media in the run-up to the night. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
World Economic Forum founder Klaus Schwab says the fusion of different technological advances are changing the world as never before. He says these advances will be a major focus at the forum's annual meeting next week in the Swiss Alpine village of Davos. Lisa Schlein reports from WEF headquarters in Geneva.
More than 2,500 leaders in the fields of business, government, academia, civil society, the media, and arts will meet to debate matters of major import in Davos. As part of the formal agenda, more than 300 sessions will deal with critical issues involving global security, the refugee and migration crisis, geopolitical tensions, climate change, sustainable development, and the global economy. Taking center stage will be an in-depth discussion about what Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Forum, calls the fourth industrial revolution. Schwab says the revolution is being driven by advances in artificial intelligence, robotics, autonomous vehicles, 3D printing, nanotechnology, and other areas of science. He says people today do not have the luxury of time that existed in previous industrial revolutions to adapt to the rapidly evolving technological advances.
This fourth revolution comes on us like a tsunami. The speed is not to be compared with the last revolutions. And the speed of this revolution is so fast that makes it difficult or even impossible for the political community to follow up with the necessary regulatory and legislative frameworks.
Schwab says robotics, with new innovations such as self-guided cars, will destroy employment and wipe out much of the middle class, a major pillar of democratic systems.
My fear is if we are not prepared and we have a concentration of jobs in the high level, more innovative areas, and in the low service areas, and this could lead to a new problem of social exclusion, which we absolutely have to avoid.
Schwab says governments must put the necessary regulatory systems in place now to tackle the problems he expects will be brought about by these changes. Failure to do that, he warns, will lead to social tension and conflicts in the future. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Starting in 2014, West Africa experienced the largest Ebola outbreak in history, affecting countries outside the region and bringing the threat of global pandemic to the worldwide consciousness. But Ebola is not the only disease caused by microbes transferred between animals and humans, and as the global population continues to grow exponentially, along with demand for food, more threats arise. Jill Craig reports from Nairobi on the launch of a new program designed to help prevent and manage these diseases.
At a hotel in Nairobi on Tuesday, the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization and the U.S. Agency for International Development launched the East African component of FAO's Emerging Pandemic Threats, or EPT2 program, to help detect, prevent, and control new zoonotic diseases, meaning those which can be passed between animals and humans. Suvash Morzaria is the global coordinator of the EPT2 program at FAO. He says these diseases can be transmitted through the air or by touching infected fluids or materials.
Whatever the mode of transmission, even it could be transmitted by vectors, the point is that if these infectious diseases persist in our animal populations, then we have a constant risk of these diseases potentially becoming pandemic. Means causing huge, huge outbreaks and morbidity and mortality in humans and in animals as well.
Ebola is only one of the zoonotic diseases. Others include HIV and AIDS, influenza, including those commonly known as avian flu and swine flu, as well as SARS, MERS-CoV, Marburg, and Nipah. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, an estimated 6 out of every 10 infectious diseases in humans is spread from animals. And the humans keep multiplying. The United Nations projects that the world's current population of 7.3 billion people will reach 9.7 billion in 2050. And this rapid increase in the number of people means that the demand for food will also rise.
Now, these production systems will change very rapidly to meet this demand. And it's possible that some very risky practices in the production of livestock might occur. And these risky practices might create an environment for evolution of new pathogens and spread.
Kenya's Director of Veterinary Services, Dr. Kisa Juma Ngeiwa, adds that these new pathogens can be spread even further in today's mobile society.
Let me use the H7N9 influenza, which was in China. That is a disease, one of the influencers on live bird markets. Now, if you look at the aeroplanes, Kenya Airways, Ethiopian Airlines, and others, they are going to China and they're coming to Kenya every day. So because of that, there is a big vulnerability unless we put measures to be able to see and stop it from spreading.
And Morzaria says that everyone has a stake in the process.
Everybody's a threat. The virus doesn't distinguish between a poor and a rich person. That goes and infects and it kills that person if it's highly infectious and pathogenic. So I think that this is a global concern.
In October, USAID announced $87 million in new funding for the program. The money will be used to help governments and veterinary services better understand livestock systems, including the dangers of rapid growth, and to help conduct proactive surveillance, as well as identifying current and potential pathogens. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Chaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa. This is James Brotty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.